Valve has announced three new pieces of hardware coming in 2026, and I'm all in. Plus, the Atari 50 Namco DLC is out, and it's another great look at retro gaming. Tonight is November 16th, 2025, and the Bobby Blackwell Show, featuring your calls and chat comments, is up next. So you would say, even if... Okay, I'll let you go. You talk. Wow, what happened to your voice? Thank you, Skype. So video games, that's what the show is about.
This is that one, Akia Ripper from Sweden.
And what's with all the Halo hate, Bob? You've been hating on Halo a lot lately.
I just don't like shooters. I'm not saying it's a bad game, I just don't like it. Billy O.K. says he can't be seen in public playing games that aren't hardcore. What would people say? And what up, G and Chad is once again talking about wrestling. That's why. It's not because they hate the fans. It's more because they have to start from scratch.
Hogwash. Later.
From a little room in Atlanta, Georgia, Bobby Blackwolf.
That's right. I'm here on this Sunday night in November. Hello, everybody. Welcome to a new hardware edition of the Bobby Blackwell Show, where we discuss the current news affecting the video game industry, as well as sometimes reminisce about gaming's history. My name is Bobby Blackwell. If you're joining us live here on this Sunday night in November, thank you so much for being here. I know there's other things you could be doing, and the fact that you would spend it with us is amazing. We do try to tape the show live just about each and every Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, over at the Voice of Geeks Network Twitch channel, twitch.tv/VogNetwork. Come join us, interact with the show directly, and I'll be trying to read intelligent comments from chat throughout the night. But obviously, it is Sunday night. There are other things you could be doing, and that is perfectly okay as well. This is a podcast, so you can join us on our Discord server. VogNetwork.com/Discord gets you into that Discord server. And you can talk back about anything, give your opinions on things that we've talked about, or suggest stories that you want us to talk about later on the show. Or on future shows or whatever. December 8th, I believe, is the Sunday. That Sunday, I will not be here. That is when I am going to be out for, you know, doing some stuff. So, unfortunately, that's in, I believe, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, something like that. But all the other Sundays for the rest of the year, I should be here. So, we're going to have some fun, I guess. Hey, the good news is, tonight's episode, I don't think there's any hogwash in this episode. This is the type of episode I like to do. These are the type of news I like to talk about, and not more people got laid off or, you know, we're, you know, replacing humans with robots to do certain things. This is a night that I am very excited for. And yes, other bad things are happening in the industry. There's a lot of crap going on. But tonight, let's talk and get excited about this industry. Let's get excited about gaming for the people, especially for the people that are in the industry right now. Let's talk about some good stuff. So let's start off by talking about. I've been talking a lot about Digital Eclipse. I guess, you know, I'm not on their payroll. They do know we exist at Vogue. They do know I exist. Mike Mika, who is the head of Digital Eclipse, did send me one post, or one reply on Blue Sky. So we are obviously best of friends. We're not best of friends. But I've been singing their praises a lot lately, and we will talk about the Mortal Kombat Legacy Collection a little bit later on when I'm with Rob, because I did finish that, and it was very interesting, some of the stuff that some of the people that were included and some who weren't, which we've alluded to in previous episodes. But I want to first talk about what SSJ under Matt in our chat room just said is Atari 50. It's the gift that keeps on giving. So let's talk a little bit about Atari 50 and what they added. And I talked about it first last week, and it is the Atari 50 Anniversary Collection added a Namco DLC, basically a new chapter. And it adds like a seventh chapter, I think, to Atari 50. There were five when it shipped and then two DLC before. And then this is the third one. And this talks about this highlights the Atari relationship with Namco, because Atari Japan, they sold Atari Japan to Namco, and they reveal in here it's because they were breaking so many Japanese laws because they were Americans that didn't understand how Japanese businesses worked. So they were about to like get in all this trouble. So they just sold the Atari Japan business to Namco, and Namco basically sold Atari products in Japan, and that's how they got into the video game business. And it talks about the Namco games that were on the Atari systems and things like that. Now, what I want to highlight is that last week I talked about Atari 2600. The Atari 2600 version of Pac-Man is very much maligned. It was the best-selling game cartridge of all time for many years. But it is a very weird port, and it doesn't play like the original. It doesn't look like the original. And especially if you play it on modern systems today, there's flickery, it gives you headaches and all that stuff. And I said, you know, I've read a book, because, you know, every once in a while I do read books, believe it or not, by Dr. Ian Bogost, who is a professor of digital media, digital games and things like that, and does a lot of stuff about video games. He did a book called Racing the Beam, which is all about the technical wizardry of the Atari 2600. And he covered six games in there in the book, each chapter. So he covered E.T., he covered Pitfall, and he's including like snippets from the source code. To explain, but he covered Pac-Man. And essentially, he said that Pac-Man never should have existed on the Atari 2600 because the Atari 2600 wasn't made to have that type of game. Atari 2600 was made to play Pong and variants of Pong, and everybody else used those same Pong assets to make other things happen. And I was like, I hope this DLC gives it the props that it deserves. And I am pleased to report it absolutely does. Mike Mika, who I referenced, he's the head of Digital Eclipse, actually sits down with Todd Fry, who was the programmer he was the engineer behind Pac-Man and behind several other Namco adaptations. And it does, like, there is an entire, like, 6-minute video really explaining what I was just talking about. And then there's, like, 4 more minutes that goes into a little bit deeper. And then, like, his, you know, how he had, you know, 2-player in the 2600 version, which he only had 8K, he had only had an 8K ROM and only had 128 bytes of RAM. And he wanted to be able to have the arcade experience of the second player, their play field was there, and, you know, all you know, what level they're on and what dots have been eaten, what dots haven't. And that's a 22-byte. He said it was 22 bytes, which is a lot when you only have 128 bytes total. And so he went really deep on that, why he was doing that. They even talk about why is the playfield blue and not black, and he talks about that. I'm not going to spoil the answer on that. And then he goes on and talks about how he tried to port Xevious to the Atari 2600 and how it didn't work, but they did show footage. I don't know if the prototype ROM for that is out there, but they did show the footage of the Atari 2600 version of Xevious that he had started on, but he could not make the game work on the 2600 because of the limitations of the console. Now, Fifth Dream says Miss Pac-Man on the 2600 was great, and they don't cover that on here. But he didn't work on Miss Pac-Man, but they did cover, you know, like some of the other variants of Pac-Man on the other Atari systems, like the one on the 5200, on the 400, and the 800 XL, and things like that. So, you know, they were able to do more with, you know, bigger ROM sizes and stuff like that. They were able to do more, but I believe, you know, they wanted Pac-Man, the 2600 version of Pac-Man, to be the most affordable ever. And so that's why they didn't want to put a larger board in there, because then the cartridge would cost more, and they didn't want to do that. And it wound up being, the best-selling game cartridge, for many, many, many years. And Todd even goes into the fact that he got paid royalties because this was after Activision showed up and after iMagic showed up, which were all former Atari employees that wanted royalties, and they wanted royalties. So he got royalties on Pac-Man, and, yeah, he made a lot of money on that. So it was really nice to see them, you know, kind of give the 2600 Pac-Man its flowers and really talk about, you know, how it shouldn't have existed, but that it was a sensation anyway. People loved it. at the time. We look back at it now and was like, oh, that sucks. But in 1982, you got to play Pac-Man at home. And that was fantastic. So that's on there. They do have a couple of variants of Dig Dug, including an Atari 2600 version of Dig Dug, which I had never played. But several of the variants, like computer versions of Dig Dug. And then I believe they have like a Dig Dug and a Xevious arcade. So you can play the arcade version in this. Those are the games that are on here, basically. It's Dig Dug, Xevious Galaxian, and then I think there is one version of Galaga on here, because Atari did those here in the U.S. Yeah, now Esther and Matt says, also a lot of Coke, Cola, of course, was involved. They didn't go into that here. There is in the base Atari 50. When they actually have like most of the people, which I believe Todd Fry was also in those, they do kind of have a fun, like there's one video where they're like, oh, we did a ton of that. And like the management's like, there was none of that in the office. And Howard Scott Warshaw comes on and is like, oh, we were high all the time. And then it cuts back to the management that was like, yeah, no, we were, you know, I'm sure they did some of that stuff, but it wasn't as prevalent. And Howard Scott Warshaw comes back and goes like, oh yeah, it was, it's great. So they don't talk about that in this because they've already covered that subject in one of the previous chapters. This was mostly all new information and stuff. And they, you know, Nolan Bushnell's in it a little bit, talking about the corporate history between them and Namco. But Atari got Namco in the video game business because they were making toy horses for carousels before Atari. They bought Atari Japan and started distributing Atari. And it's also what was the most popular Atari arcade game in Japan. It was not Pac-Man, believe it or not, because they at the time didn't have that much of a two-player, or it wasn't Pong at the time. Pac-Man came later. It wasn't Pong because they didn't have that much two-player stuff, especially at the home market, because Japanese homes were so small that you didn't really have your friends over. You went to like an arcade, so the home market was Breakout was like their breakout hit. Get it? Yeah. Esther and Matt says, too many games, not enough time. And thankfully, so the Atari 50, this DLC, it is a short documentary. There's probably only about 20 minutes of video. There's only about 8 games. So it's $8. But you know, they've got the promotional materials that they have and like the press releases and box art and alternative box art and stuff like that. But it doesn't take you that long to go through it. I probably spent a good hour and pretty much feel that I saw every bit of it. And then it's just going back and playing the games more if I wanted to. So I still love Atari 50, and I think it is, it's the gift that keeps on giving, as Jonah and Matt said earlier. And, if you want to learn about the history, it's a very good history time capsule, digital library of Atari, as well as a little bit of Intellivision and now a little bit of Namco. So, eventually it's going to be everything. All right. So that's the past. Let's look to the future. Valve actually did say the number 3. In a video this week. It is not the number 3 you're thinking of. That might be this week. We don't know. We're not going to talk about that unless it happens, and then we'll talk about it next week. But let's talk about what they actually announced. They actually put out a video earlier this week, a 6-minute video, about their hardware. And it's not about the Steam Deck. It is actually about 3 new pieces of hardware. All hail the new Steam hardware. The GameCube, or not the GameCube, the GabeCube, because Gabe Newell owns Valve. Get it? The GabeCube? Yeah. So there are three new things coming. Game Informer reports that Valve has revealed the Steam Machine, a cubicle device that's 6 times more powerful than the Steam Deck and lets you play your entire Steam library with ease on a TV in your living room. There is no price or release date yet, but it should be out in early 2026. They also revealed the Steam Frame, a new streaming-first wireless VR headset with controllers that lets you play your entire Steam VR and non-VR catalog, and also the Steam Controller, which looks a lot like a Nintendo Switch 2 Pro controller, but with the touchpad seen on the Steam Deck. So the Valve and the controller will also be released in early 2026. So I wanted to talk about each one of these because I have not yet gotten a Steam Deck, but I'm probably all in on all of these three, which will probably also mean that I will eventually get a Steam Deck. So Esgerda Matt says, Gabe just smiling around and living on his boat, just now clicking on the button for it to go live now. Haha. Zemike 11 says, didn't they make a Steam machine before? Yes, they did. I actually have it, and I didn't have the time to pull it out. But this Steam machine is a little bit different. That Steam machine was literally just a streaming client, and you had to have it on the same network as your gaming PC, and it would stream the game from your gaming PC to wherever the Steam machine was. And it worked out fine. And I have one, and it worked fine. I just didn't really have that much of a use for it. This Steam machine is more self-contained. So Valve says that the Steam machine is over 6 times more powerful than the Steam Deck, and it can play all of your Steam library. Just sign in with your Steam account with the device and you're set. It features SteamOS, an OS optimized for gaming with its fast suspend resume and cloud saves. It's all packed into a small form factor, roughly the size of a 6-inch cube. It's the game, the Gabe Cube. The company says it keeps itself cool. It's whisper quiet. If you actually, they showed teardowns and it's like all of it's basically a fan, cooling fan. Most of it is a cooling fan. And can handle any peripherals you attach to it thanks to a 1 gigabit Ethernet port, DisplayPort 1.4, HDMI 2.0, 1 USB-C port, and 4 USB-A ports. So Valve says you can expect 4K gaming at 60 frames per second with FSR, which is kind of like an upscaling thing, thanks to a semi-custom AMD desktop class CPU and GPU, and it will come in either a 512 gig or 2 terabyte storage capacity. But both can be expanded via micro SD. In terms of connectivity, the Steam machine has 2x2 Wi-Fi 6E plus Bluetooth 5.3 with a dedicated antenna. The Steam controller's wireless adapter is built right into the cube. We'll get into that in a second, which Valve says makes for easy pairing. And finally, the Steam machine's power supply is built in, so there's no large power brick. An LED strip along the bottom of the cube lets you keep an eye on the system status, such as download progress, even when the screen is off. You can change the colors and the animations, too. Valve says it is expanding its verified program to include ratings for Steam Machine so customers can understand how their games will run. Also, despite functioning like a plug-and-play console, it's still a PC, so you can install your own apps or a completely different operating system if you want. So, let's talk about this for a little bit here. This is going to be a console. And Fifth Dream, said, they didn't announce price. Fifth Dream's like, so it's going to be $4,500. I think this is a lower-end PC, and this doesn't actually have like the real specs that somebody posted, but like one thing, there's only 8 gigabytes of video RAM on this. So they mentioned that you're going to have 4K gaming with the upscaling, so you're not actually getting 4K textures. And if you want true 4K gaming, you're better off building your own gaming PC. Now, what would be great is if they release Steam OS for a desktop, which might be coming soon. I don't know. But it's a lot easier to do this for like one specific configuration. So everybody, so if it's Steam Deck or Steam Machine verified, you know it's going to work because all Steam Decks have the same hardware in it. All Steam Machines will have the same hardware, just different storage. So, but this, you can stream, I'm sure, from your main desktop if you want, but this is made to be a standalone device that plays most of your Steam games. It's running on Steam OS, which is Linux. It does have an ARM processor instead of an x86 processor, I believe, but you can sideload Android games on it, so you can actually load Android stuff on this. But this is designed to be an entry-level PC for the living room, in the sense of they are targeting people that don't care about having the latest and greatest. If they want the latest and greatest, you can build a PC that is about the same form factor for $4,500, and it'll perform way better than the Steam machine will. But it's something that people are just going to be able to plug in, and it's going to work just like how the Steam Deck plug in and it works. So it's using a lot of the things they learned from the Steam Deck and putting it on your TV, so you don't have to get a Steam Deck and then get a dock, which is actually what I was considering doing, was, oh, I'll get a Steam Deck and get a dock, and then I can play somewhat on my nice TV. But this is right up my alley. And as Sharon Matt says, the price will be important. Hard to know what it'll be in this tariff world. And Valve even says they don't know what it's going to cost yet. They're holding that close to their chest, because you never know when this launches how much they're going to have to pay to get all this stuff in. Because I guarantee you, there's no factories in America that's going to be able to build this. So they're going to have to import the hardware from somewhere else, because it's going, even if we started building factories right now, it'll be 5 years before they're operational and staffed. So it's they're going to be importing it, and they don't know what the tariff situation is going to be by then. But with a lot of the things that Microsoft has done with Windows, a lot of people are like, well, I have to have Windows, and I'm like this. I have to have Windows because it plays all my games. And Valve is doing everything they can to make that not the case. And you can, I believe, put Windows on the Steam OS. And it would be nice to see, it would be interesting to see if, like, because Xbox, everything is an Xbox, if Game Pass comes to Steam OS. Because right now you need Windows. You know, is that going to be somewhere that they go? Because there's going to be all these Steam Decks and Steam machines, and they're going to want their Xbox Game Pass natively on it without you having to sideload another operating system onto it. Because remember, they have to make 30% profit margins. So I am excited about this. I am pretty sure that my desktop PC is more powerful than what the Steam machine is, but you know what? I'm fine with that. Because if I want to play something with that high fidelity, I'm not going to be wanting it down there. I'm going to be wanting where my 4K monitor is, you know, only a couple feet away from my face, and I can be fully immersed in it. So this is a great step in getting me onto really more of the Steam ecosystem. Now, the other thing about that is the controller. So they also announced a Steam controller. Now, ZenMonkey 11 is going to be like, didn't they make a Steam controller before? Yes, they did. I also have one of those. I wasn't able to get it out to show. But I loved the concepts in them, especially the two big pads for that could emulate the mouse or whatever. And they did bring those into the Steam Deck. They, you know, retooled it, made it smaller, made them little pads. So they are now doing a new Steam controller, or as Fifth Dream says in our chat, the Steam Troller. So we've got the Gabe Cube and the Steam Troller. So the new Steam controller has been built for Steam and is configurable with Steam input, allowing you to use it on a PC, a laptop, the Steam Deck, the Steam Machine, and even the Steam Frame. We're getting to that in a second. And it comes with the Steam Controller Puck, which is both a wireless transmitter that provides a fast, stable connection to your Steam controller, and is also a charging station that connects to the controller magnetically. But you can still use it Bluetooth or USB. Valve says the Steam controller features magnetic thumbsticks with TMR technology designed for improved feel, responsiveness, and long-term reliability. Plus, they also support capacitive touch for motion controls, and the entire controller features high-definition rumble and a grip-enabled gyro. So for motion controls and things like that. And I believe, like, there's like a button you can hold or something, a way you can hold it to turn on and off the gyro. So if you want it, you can have it. If you don't, you don't. It features all the other usual controller features like thumbsticks, buttons, bumpers, and triggers designed for comfort, motion controls, grip buttons, the Steam button, a quick menu access button, and even trackpads like those seen on the Steam Deck, which is great for mouse control. That is how they emulate mouse control when you don't have a keyboard and mouse in front of you, like when you're playing on your couch. It's also due sometime during 2026, but there is no specific release date or cost. It does have a very long battery, but if you need to, you can just dock it on the little puck and keep it that way. And it's great because one of the things that a lot of people forget is that there are a lot of gaming motherboards and motherboards aimed at gamers that they're like, you're going to be wired anyway. So there's no Wi-Fi or Bluetooth on the motherboard. And my motherboard is like that. I don't actually have Wi-Fi or Bluetooth on my motherboard. So if I wanted to hook up a Bluetooth device to my desktop, I need to get a separate Bluetooth dongle, which I'm considering getting for if I do want to get the PlayStation VR 2 running on this machine. I need a Bluetooth dongle for that. But they're providing their own puck for it that that is the Wi-Fi connection. It's probably lower latency than Bluetooth. You're not fighting everything else on for Bluetooth. And it also acts as a charger. Starlock also says, Valve has also been making strides in accessibility. SteamOS has recently received a screen reader, and that is awesome. That is very good. I'm really glad to hear that. I haven't used SteamOS. Actually, I've never used SteamOS. I've used Steam Big Picture. That's about as far as I've gotten, but I haven't used SteamOS because I haven't gotten a Steam Deck yet. So, S. Jordan Matt says, I still have my Steam controller in the box. I don't have mine in the box, but I do. I did really like it. It's just I never kept using it because I think there was like some things that it didn't do that an Xbox controller did or something like that. But now like this could be my new like PC controller because right now, unfortunately, my cats broke my USB dongle. I broke it, but it was because I was trying to get my cats out of somewhere. So I actually have to wire in my Xbox controller to be able to use it. And I'm like, well, now I'm going to have to get something Bluetooth so I can use a wireless controller again. And I may just get the Steam controller. And, you know, I'll suffer through the wired Xbox controller for a little bit longer. But the one thing in here that I'm actually really most excited for is the Steam Frame. So let's talk about the Steam Frame for just a little bit here. So the Steam Frame is the new Valve VR device. So the final piece of new Steam hardware is the Steam Frame, a VR and non-VR gaming device, but it's a VR device. Valve calls it a streaming-first wireless VR headset that includes unique controllers, and the entire package can handle your whole Steam library. So they say, step into immersive VR, lean back, and enjoy your non-VR catalog. And it supports standalone, too. The Steam Frame headset is lightweight and compact, with the weight balance front to rear, for a comfortable experience. It's also easy to just slip on and play with no wires and no setup. With the included plug-and-play 6 GHz wireless adapter, you can play both VR and non-VR games via streaming, and the device includes something Valve calls foveated streaming, which optimizes details based on where your eyes are looking, Like the Steam Deck and Steam Machine, Valve is expanding its Verified program to include the Steam Frame as well, sometime in early 2026, no specific release date or price. So the foveated streaming is an interesting thing because that is how it can push better data based on where you're looking. Whereas right now you can have foveated rendering on like a PlayStation VR, and it makes things crisper at the, you know, wherever you're looking, which PlayStation VR 2 has. But this allows you to have the foveated streaming where it can push really detailed stuff wirelessly while not really spending that much time on, you know, what you're doing, what you're not looking at, what your eye is not looking at. So it also, the interesting thing here, whereas like the Meta Quest, right? The Meta Quest 2 and 3, if you have AirLink, it uses your Wi-Fi connection. So you have to be very close to your Wi-Fi router and all that stuff, which it did work great. For my use case, when I had a Meta Quest 3 for a couple months, I used AirLink. It worked perfectly fine. I didn't put it through too much of its paces because it was a work product and it wasn't my personal product. But it worked fine. What they're doing here, though, is that they are having a 6 gigahertz wireless adapter that literally only talks to the Steam Frame. So it's its own Wi-Fi band, separate from your home Wi-Fi, separate from, you know, anything else going on. Like, yes, there's probably signal congestion at other bands, other, you know, wireless bands like there are anywhere. But it's going to be have a dedicated connection to your computer. But also, it's a standalone device running SteamOS, and you can sideload Android APKs on it. So you can have, like, and that's a lot of what the Meta Quest was. You could sideload some things onto the Meta Quest. Meta doesn't make it easy, but it's still Android. So you can sideload Android things onto it. And it will run SteamOS-based VR games. And it even, I believe there's like some kind of compatibility layer where even though it's an ARM chipset, it can run x86 Windows titles in its ARM SteamOS operating system. So what I am hoping for, my hope, is that this brings back PC VR, because Meta took the market of all of PC VR and they basically said, we're going to just be doing Meta Quest. The Meta Quest 2 and 3, they are the best-selling VR headsets of all time right now. They have the market share. So what happens is that, well, when developers do decide they're going to make a VR title, it's exclusive to Meta Quest. Because why bother doing PC VR when the market share's on Meta Quest? And what that means is that we actually get lower quality stuff because the Meta Quest is essentially a mobile device. And you can't get higher quality stuff, which does make it, you know, easier on them. They don't need as high quality textures, but the option of playing it with very high quality textures is not there unless they port to PC VR. And there's no point in porting to PC VR because only the diehards are on PC and they don't spend enough money. But with this, the Steam Frame kind of going right after that market and being like, well, yeah, we are a standalone device, but we're also PC. Maybe we'll start seeing some of these games that have been Quest exclusive finally saying, you know what? Maybe the Steam Frame market is where we want to be. And they don't have the stigma of being part of Meta. I am excited for the Steam Frame. It uses inside-out tracking. It's got controllers that look a lot like the Meta Touch, or whatever they're called the Meta controllers now. Used to be called Oculus Touch. I don't know if that's what they still call them. It looks a lot like those. Has all this, but has a lot of the gimmicks that are in the Steam controller and the Steam Deck. The cameras are black and white, whereas on Meta Quest 3, it's in color. So the exact use case I had for the Meta Quest 3 for work would not actually work on a Steam Frame. But there is a PCIe slot on the Steam Frame, so you can modify it and you can add color cameras or a smell sensor or something like that. They are keeping it as kind of open hardware, which is another kind of Valve hallmark, because Valve's owned by Gabe Newell. It's not owned by anybody else. So Gabe Newell is the only person they have to answer to. They don't have to answer to shareholders. They don't have to answer to a board or anything like that. So Esther and Matt says, so Gabe is going to be sailing away with Bobby's money in 2026. Yes. And then if Hallmark comes out with a Christmas ornament of the Steam Frame or the Steam Machine, then Hallmark will also get some of my money. But that's a different topic for another time. But yeah, no, I am all in. And because of this, and this is probably what Valve's marketing, or, you know, the geniuses over there in the marketing department know, is because of this, if I'm all in on this, I'll probably finally get a Steam Deck. Because if now, like, a lot of my gaming is going to be done in the Steam ecosystem, why not get a Steam Deck? Because if the reason I'm kind of more on, especially if it's mobile handheld gaming, the reason I'm more on the Switch 2 is because I could play it either on my big screen or I can play it handheld. All the Digital Eclipse stuff I got on Steam. I got Legacy Collection on Steam too, but Atari 50 is a Steam game because that's when I'm most likely to play a lot of the DLs, the retro games and things like that. I get the Square Enix RPGs, like the remakes, like Final Fantasy Tactics, I got on Switch. Once Upon a Katamari, I got on Switch. Yeah, they play better on PS5 and Xbox, but I have to be in one space for that. And if I can now do that with the Steam ecosystem. And if I want really high quality, I can play it on this great gaming PC right here. Or if I want it on the go, I can play it on the Steam Deck at a little lower quality, or I can play it on the Steam machine down in the, you know, I might, this may mean that it's not going to be cheap, but it's probably going to be best for my gaming ecosystem, my personal gaming ecosystem. Because as Sharon and Matt says, you know, I'm waiting on the price. I am at least in on the controller. I'm wanting to get into PC VR, but the price will be key. They did say that they expect the Steam Frame to be cheaper than the Valve Index. And the Valve Index, I believe, right now is $750. But that comes with the base stations and the Knuckles controllers and stuff like that. So they want it to be cheaper than that. They are also discontinuing the Valve Index. They have stopped production on the Valve Index. They have stopped production on the base stations. They've stopped production on the Knuckles controllers. It is at its end of life. The Valve Index is, you know, it had a good run because I think, what was it, 2016, no, 2018, 2019? The HTC Vive was 2016, but I believe the Valve Index was 2018, 2019. So it's had a good, you know, 7-year run. A lot of other people's are falling apart. Mine's not. Mine's doing great, but a lot of other people are having problems. So it's pretty much time for an upgrade. Now, Michigan says, will the new controller, the Steam controller, work on the deck or only on the new device? So, the good news is, the answer is it works everywhere. So, there is that special wireless puck, right? But you can also hook it up via Bluetooth to anything. And even in their announcement video when they showed it, they even showed it working on people's Steam Deck. So, and you can use it on your computer. So there's a little puck that you can hook up to your computer's USB port, and it works with that. Or if you don't want to love the puck, you can use, you know, you can set it to Bluetooth. You can also, the Steam machine has that puck built in. So the new Steam machine, you don't need that USB puck. But then, because it is Bluetooth, you can use it on anything that accepts a Bluetooth controller. Anything that accepts a Bluetooth controller. So, not just a Steam Deck, but theoretically, your Nintendo Switch. You could use it on your Nintendo Switch. You could hook it up to, you know, a Raspberry Pi running retro games, if you want. You know, or running your emulators. Anything that accepts USB, or you can just directly plug it in via USB to something. So the answer is you can use it anywhere you want that accepts a Bluetooth controller. Like you could even, like my phone accepts a Bluetooth controller. I could play play games on my phone with the Steam controller if I want. So Valve is very much into the, you can use this however you want. You can mod it to do whatever you want. We'll give you everything we can to make it easy for you to use it wherever you want. And you know, send us pictures of what cool things you do with our stuff, because we think it's cool. Now, ZenMonkey11 asks, is that new Steam VR device going to have AR? That's the big seller for me. It's hard to me play games on my Quest 3S that aren't AR, which is augmented reality. So, you know how I said Michigan's like, yes, everything, blah, blah, blah. In ZenMonkey11, I'm going to say no. And the reason I'm going to say no is because, well, it does have AR. Like, it has the ability to do AR. But they're monochrome cameras. And they said that because they wanted to keep the price down, is kind of what they have said, because people have asked. In fact, there is an extremely misleading part of this video when they go through the Steam Deck, which shows somebody using kind of like a big picture mode. And they're watching something, and it makes you think that they are using AR to do it. And that is something actually very incorrect. There is a very misleading of somebody on their big picture on their couch, and it's AR, and they're playing Hades 2, and it's in their environment. That is not true. So, unfortunately, they have monochromatic cameras. So you probably can see around you. It's monochromatic. I don't think AR games are going to be there at the beginning. So, the caveat to that is, as I said before, there is a PCIe port in the front of the device. And the Valve Index actually has this too. There's a little, it's a USB thing, and you can put USB things into it. And you can add color cameras via that PCIe port. And you can do whatever you want. And people, I'm sure, will go ahead and make that so it could do proper AR. But out of the box, you're not going to have color augmented reality. It's a VR device. It's not an AR device. So you're going to want to go down to the Meta Quest 3 route if you want color AR and AR experiences and stuff like that. I do think that bit of their trailer where they're like they're playing Hades 2 and it looks like they're on, you know, they're seeing it through their world. That is misleading. And Valve should know better. But they don't, I guess. So it is what it is. I'm excited for this because it's finally going to get me something that's a new PC VR headset that doesn't have to go into the Meta ecosystem anymore than I already am. The Apple Vision Pro, I'm sure, is great, but I'm not in the Apple ecosystem. I mean, I am at work, but I don't use my work for computer for anything. That's not work. So it doesn't help me. I don't have the rest of the ecosystem to make the Apple Vision Pro worth it for me. This is going to be great for a lot of people. Now, George Game Devs, GGDA, is in, says that's a good analysis of the new Valve products. And I think one thing that should also be noted here is that this does open the door to a lot more indie developers to have something that works on a TV, especially with the Stream Machine. Because with the Steam Machine, you only have to go through Valve's certification process, and you're already doing that if you're making a PC VR title. You don't have to pay extra to do the Switch's indie game and the Xbox and the PlayStation and stuff. So this gets a living room game with only having to pay the $100 to get listed on Steam. This is going to be great for a lot of smaller developers to get a game that's in a console-like experience. And if the Steam Machine does actually do what it promises and people actually do buy it, this is going to be great for a lot of people. And it's probably hopefully going to get more sales for indie developers so we can still have a great gaming and ecosystem even as everybody else is, you know, laying all the big studios are laying people off. And it's you got to have a lot of money to start an indie studio. So just because you worked in the game industry and got laid off doesn't mean you can immediately go and make your own indie game, because not everybody has that kind of financial flexibility to be able to do that. I know I couldn't. If I got laid off from my job tomorrow, no, I would not be able to start an indie game studio. I'd need to go work for, if the man that's hiring me now and paying me now gets rid of me, I have to go find anew the man to go get paid. Anyway. They're all coming out in early 2026. We do not know the price yet because Valve has not wanted to commit to that yet because of economic uncertainties right now. But there are many previews. A lot of people were actually in Valve's offices, a lot of YouTubers, and they've played with all of these devices. There are downsides to all of them. I did not really cover a lot of them here, except for like the monochromatic cameras on the Steam Frame. There are downsides to these devices. Remember that there is only 8 gigabytes of video RAM on the Steam Machine, so you're not getting true 4K gaming, but it does upscale up to 4K really well. And there's a lot of people that have talked about the pros and the cons, and Valve's allowed them to do it. They got to see the device, spend some time with the device. Testing like the wireless connectivity, how far away can you get from the dongle when you're doing the Steam Frame, and things like that. So there's a lot of that out there already. It looks like a bunch of people have been honest because, like I said, there have been some critical things said about these devices. And, you know, I don't expect Valve to be coming down hard on those people. And then Rin Marie in her chat says, I don't care for 4K in my games anyway. And I get that. I think I'm looking at it from the fact that I have a 4K television, and things that are in 1080p to that television don't look as good as things that are in 4K. And the upscaling is fine with that. Like if it's a good upscaler, if the Steam Machine has a great upscaler on it, then it's going to look better than having my TV try to upscale it, because my TV's upscaler is not as good as a dedicated upscaler that would be in the Steam machine. So that's the only reason I would care. If you don't have a 4K TV, then this is going to be great. If all you have is a 1080 TV, an HD TV, like, you know, what most of them have been for a long time, the Steam machine is going to be great for you. Hopefully. Hopefully. That's what everybody says that's seen it in person. And a bunch of people have seen it in person. And PodCulture says the NVIDIA Shield is a pretty good upscaler. It does. I have a Shield TV Pro is the NVIDIA, and I've got it hooked up to my 4K setup, and it's a pretty good upscaler. All right. So normally I take a music break, and I won't this time around. It was a decent one. No new overclock remixes came out, so it's not like I'm bumping something that's new, but I had something queued up. Sometimes I do take calls. Maybe we'll be able to take calls a little bit more in the coming months. But coming up next here on the Voice of Geeks Network at twitch.tv/VogNetwork is Orange Lounge Radio. It's three people out in Sacramento, California. They talk about games for much, much longer than I do. And that next week is the big week for what is going to be the final episode. Sacramento, are you there?
I'm here, Bobby. How are you?
I am doing well. How are you doing tonight?
I'm good. It's Sunday. Must be OLR time.
It must be OLR time. The Gabe Cube and the Steam Troller and the new face, you know, Gabe Face, I guess. I don't know what I'm going to call the third one. What are your initial, like, I know you're going to talk more about it, but what are your initial thoughts on the Valve 3? They said the number 3. The Valve 3 announcements.
Price is crucial.
Yeah.
And it's a huge missing piece right now. We need to know what that is. But if they can price this underneath what an Xbox costs right now, which mm-hmm. isn't necessarily a difficult thing to do with everything that's been going on at Microsoft, this thing is going to kill the Xbox.
Yeah.
And it's not even going to be close. I think the way Microsoft's been run the past couple of years, I think they need this. I think they need a little bit of needling in this department. And I think this thing could be a huge success. I think one thing that'll be important to separate this a little bit from Xbox, of course, is having those, and I'm going to use my quotey fingers, exclusives. I realize that Steam and PC already has certain exclusives mm-hmm. that you don't necessarily get the same, although that line has been blurred a lot more in, you know, the last 10 years. But if it is true, and I realize it's a huge if, that Valve is preparing another Half-Life game, whether it's Half-Life 3 or some type of Alex, you know, type of, you know, spinoff, because many would argue that Half-Life Alex was Half-Life 3. That could be huge for this console. So we'll see. But I think if you look at the popularity of the Steam Deck, I think mm-hmm. that gives you a real, especially versus other Microsoft branded decks and most other companies out there that are putting out portable devices outside of Nintendo, because Nintendo lives in their little cloud and they can get away with it because of their strong IPs. I really think is gonna have a pretty big whopper on its hand, but that price is crucial, and I think a lot of us are really speculating, and we don't know how the tariffs are going to impact things.
And
all
they
that.
Don't
so
either.
And not to get too political, I know you don't do that on your show, but we have seen, you know, it is fact, tariffs are being reversed in some industries currently. So we just have to see how this plays out over the next few months.
I'll be in, and this also might give me, because I know you have a Steam Deck. I've never actually used a mm-hmm. Steam Deck. And it's just because I, you know, have to make the choices, like, what am I going to use when I'm traveling or whatever, and I chose the Switch ecosystem. But if the Steam machine does what they say it does, then Steam Deck's probably in my future. They're probably getting me to jump, which is, you know, older hardware, but, like, that may be the push I need. Because I do my TV gaming on an Xbox really right now, and some mm-hmm. PlayStation, but I chose Xbox for the cross buy between PC and Xbox, so I could play the same, buy the game once and play it in two places. But if I can do that with Steam, then, you know, I'm willing to jump.
That is the fascinating part about this, right? For all this talk about cross-buy with PlayStation and Microsoft, like Steam, it's built in. There is no argument about cross-buy. You will have it on the Steam, you know, the Steam machine. You'll have it on the Steam Deck. You'll have it on your Steam PC or Mac or Linux or whatever it is you're running. You'll have it all. And that's a very powerful argument, and it's going to push I think it's going to push Sony a little bit in that direction, yeah. Because why on earth would you buy a game? You know, it's I think the market need a little disruption, so I'm really excited to see yeah. what the Steam is seeing. But again, if it's $1,000, never mind.
Yeah.
It depends on the price.
Yeah. But I like the idea. And that's mm-hmm. what we've been sold on the idea this week. And I'm in for all three. Like Gabe Newell's, like he's going to be on his yacht being like, it's more Bobby Blackwolf money. More Bobby Blackwolf money coming in.
Actually, I should have said the VR. I don't know where I'm at with the heart machine just because I do have a deck. It is hooked up to my PC. I don't know where I'm at with all that. But like the VR, I'm very interested in.
Yeah.
Especially because I won't have to touch Meta.
Yes.
Which is great. Great mm-hmm. news. So I'm all about the Steam VR. But we'll see. Again, price, big yeah. part of that.
They did say that.
Justify it.
Yeah, they yeah. did say that they want it to be less than the Valve Index. That is their goal.
Want it to be and will be are two different phrases. But
that's
I get it.
The
I get,
idea.
I know.
They yes. are selling us on that idea.
Yes.
I'm happy. I don't know, you know.
No, I know, but they don't know because, you know, yeah. and to be fair, I'm giving you crap, but it's because of the uncertainty of everything going yeah. on in the world. That's why yeah. they're not going to drop a definitive price until the pre-order's open. Yeah. And it is what it is.
Yeah. But yeah, no, and if the idea is sound and has a good price point, price point's a marketing term. I shouldn't be saying it. Price, because that's what I pay. Then, you know, yeah, those multi-platform things, I'd be getting the PC version every time, yeah. you know, right now I get the console version and I may be like, no, I'll get the PC version and play it on my Steam machine, you know, and just save the exclusives, you know, cause I still like playing those as well.
It's going to change that conversation for a lot of people, yeah. but it should be noted, this is not the first time Steam has released a machine. Uh-huh. I just think there's something about the way the tech is now and something, you know, now that we're that was about 8 years ago, maybe.
Oh, well, more than that, 10, 12 years ago, but also it only streamed.
Time flies.
It was a streaming device. Well,
there was that, but didn't they actually sell computers? Like they partnered with somebody to make those machines?
Yeah, but it was still a streaming device.
And it was really expensive.
Yeah.
So
I have the streaming stream machine and the stream
yeah,
controller.
I forgot about the stream machine. I even have one of those things, yeah. but that was a bit of a non-starter, unfortunately. So,
yeah. And it does yeah. actually still work. Like you can actually mm-hmm. plug it in. It works with Steam today, but mm-hmm. it's only at like 1080p and stuff like, you know, and it's a lower quality streaming bitrate because that's all they had at the time. So, you know, this is a lot better product and it's good to see it refreshed here.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see what develops.
Yep. And then to finally close the loop on our big, because every time I talk about the Mortal Kombat Legacy Collection, I did finally finish the documentary.
Me too.
And yeah, they talked to essentially just the two performance actors that basically still work with them a lot to this day. And that was it.
Yeah.
And you I had gotten
Sonya from 3 specifically.
Yeah.
You would think Sonya from 3, because they never explained what happened to Sonya from 1. They just said yeah. it changed. You would think Sonya from 3 was the only capture actor in the whole series. Yeah. But yeah. Clearly, there's other things going on.
Yeah.
But Digital Eclipse did the best job they could with what they have to work with, I'm yeah. sure.
Yeah, because I don't think it was Digital Eclipse that the other performance actors had a problem with. It was Warner Brothers.
No, and yeah. And it was interesting the things they weren't afraid to speak more critically of, specifically Mortal Kombat 4. Yeah. I think they really spoke to a lot of why Mortal Kombat 4 did not land the same. And they even went so far as to have some of the commentary. I think yeah. one individual, actually, it was Cliffy B, if I remember yeah. right, which I got to come back to that.
Yeah.
Cliffy B said something about like, oh, I didn't even really play 4. I kind of lied. You know, so they were, yeah. they, it was, I would, there's a part of me was like, well, then why did you even leave that in? But it's fine. It was okay to be a little critical of 4. I do think the industry was a little more critical of 4 at the time, but 4 led us to, and it kind of got to the ultimate conclusion, 4 set the foundation of the modern Mortal Kombat games.
Yeah.
I wish maybe for me there was a little more in the ending, because the last movie is kind of a recap video and then they add news. The last movie was very strange to me.
Yeah.
I really wish they had done one that talked maybe a little more to the modern Mortal Kombat yeah. designers besides just Boone. And how the original Mortal Kombat games, how 4 and the original OG Mortal Kombat games laid that foundation for what they're building now. And yeah. I think that would have really brought it full circle for me. I think that was maybe like the one thing that was missing besides, yeah. you know, hearing from the Piscinas and, you know, the people that these games were starring yeah. were, you know, they were credited where it needed to be. And again, I do believe this is out of Digital Eclipse's control, but, yeah. you know, it would be nice to hear from them. I did think it was interesting. They talked very, very, very little about why Tobias left
yeah.
Midway, but you know, it puts a lot in perspective. Essentially, a team of 4 people made the original Mortal Kombat, and it was what, maybe 5 for the sequel, and then what, like 7 or 8
7 or 8 for 3 yeah.
Yeah. It was very small teams, and you look at the, and then they get into, and Mortal Kombat had a live tour, and Mortal Kombat had action yep. figures, and Mortal Kombat had a comic book. And now you kind of sit there and go, okay, if I'm John Tobias and I'm watching all this stuff make money off a license, off a thing that came out of my head, I can see why he was sitting there going, you know what? I want to go off and do
yeah.
a new thing, which unfortunately for him, unfortunately, it didn't have that same marketing oomph behind it because he ended up partnering with Microsoft and they made a fighting game. I don't even remember the name of it. Somebody yeah. in chat probably does. And it didn't. You know, it's not still around, yeah. which, you know, tells you something. But anyway, I just thought it was interesting how briefly, I mean, and I get why they can't go into the whole,
yeah.
and, you know, it was very briefly acknowledged and then, like, moved on to, like, well, how are you guys today? We have a text chain and we're friends. We're always going to have yeah. that. It was there's yeah. definitely, like, there could definitely be an unauthorized documentary
yeah.
that's a lot more Jerry Springer with popcorn, and I'd be very curious about that. Yeah.
Or get somebody to make the book, because it's more likely yeah. going to be a book, because that's where we got yeah. the Masters of Doom. Yeah. That's where we learned about John Carmack versus, you know, them.
If Tobias doesn't have a book already, he should write one. Absolutely. Yeah. But anyway, Digital Eclipse, keeping it classy, keeping yes. it museum. They did yep. network issues aside on the game, because again, I'm like you, I don't give a hoot about the online yeah. know, stuff. I was about the single player experience and all that stuff. So from my perspective, they did the assignment perfectly fine. Yep.
So I'm very happy with it. I know, you know, because I cared about the documentary side. You cared about the documentary side. The games are there, but, you know, still to this day, if you wanted to buy this to play the original games online, don't. Save your money and wait for a sale.
Honestly, use the PS5 share play. You'd probably have yeah. a better experience.
Yeah.
Thank you, SJ, when I'm at Tao Fang, Fist of the Lotus. That okay. was the game.
It was yeah. on the Xbox. Okay.
Yeah. Did you play it?
I did not play that.
Yes. Yeah. I think a lot of people would answer it that way. I didn't either. Sorry to, you know, but it's so I can see where that guy yeah. probably left that experience very frustrated.
Yeah. And Atari 50, the Namco stuff, it did everything I had hoped. Other than showing yeah, pieces of the, other than showing pieces of the assembly language on screen. But, you know, I can't have everything. That was more for me, you know.
I think it's out there somewhere. It's the oh, internet, yeah. Bobby. I'm almost oh, positive no, it, Pac-Man's
no, it's out actually there. It's out and commented. Like, they actually officially released it and stuff. Like, it's in that book okay. that I was reading. But, you mm-hmm. know, so, but no, they spent a lot of time talking about, like, how 2600 Pac-Man shouldn't have been possible and how it was possible anyway. So I was very happy. So
well,
good
I look
job
to checking
Disney.
It out. I'll have to do that this week.
Yep. So what else are you going to be talking about on Orange Launch Radio tonight?
Sony had a big State of Play this week focused on Japanese games, so we'll get into that, talk about what's going on there. Fallout 4 celebrates their 10th anniversary, but might not be landing the way they'd hoped, and we'll talk about that as well. And Death Stranding expanding into other media. We'll get into that story and much more on our next to last episode, if you can yeah. believe it.
No, I can't. Orange Sound Radio is up next. Thanks so much, Rob.
Thanks as always, Bobby.
So that is it for me. I will be back next week. I am still on the air next week, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, right here at the Voice Geeks Network Twitch channel, twitch.tv/VogNetwork. Come join us, interact with the show directly, and then right after me will be the final episode of Orange Lounge Radio after 23 and a half years on the air. I will try to end as on time as possible so we can get right into it and spend the next couple hours crying. So, if you can also follow me on at BobbyBlackWolf.com, on Blue Sky, at Bobby Blackwolf on Instagram. And also on our Discord server, vognetwork.com/discord. Hey, if you like the show, tell a friend. If you hate the show, tell an enemy. I don't care. Just tell someone the show is not for everybody, but it may be for somebody who does not know about it yet. But we would not be able to make this live show work without the help of the chatters who go above and beyond. Thank you so much. We did have a hype train earlier tonight. Thank you so much. S. Jenner Matt resubscribed. Fifth Dream resubscribed with his own emote. It was like this little blinking heart. It was kind of cute. Sean322 resubscribed saying, hype. We got some hype going on. Tiger Claw resubscribed. And Rin Marie resubscribed. Thank you so much for that. We did have a hype train earlier tonight. Thank you so much. That does help. So we can kind of break even here doing this money-wise. Anyway, I'm going to hit the button. We're going to get out of here. Thank you so much for being here. I am excited for the new Gabe Cube and friends. I'll see you next week. Bye.
A winner is you. The views and opinions expressed are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and are not necessarily the opinions of
the Vogue Network, people who need to hire new voiceover guys,
or your mom. Although if Bobby said it, it really should be. This has been a production of Bobby Blackwolf Studios.